It couldn't have built up any other way. Verstappen takes a convincing pole with an outstanding lap as Hamilton lines up his Mercedes next door with a slightly scruffy one he'll hope to overcome when it really matters. Welcome back to the Grid Talk podcast. Hosting today will be me, Owen Medford, and joining me are Aaron Harper from the Five Red Lights podcast.
Hello.
F1 writer Olivia Cairo.
Hello.
And Tom Downey from Everything F1.
Hello.
Just before we get into the main show, I'll just like to shout out some of the five-star reviews we've got. We've got Alcoholic Savage, who says that always looks forward to hearing our guys our take on the race. Great balance between humour and being informative. Thank you for that. We've got Chess34, who's from the US and has started watching F1 this year. I promise it stays fairly interesting, but it won't hit the heights of this year. But thank you for coming to us after each race. And Hams asked. He's been an F1 fan for 20 years, but you know, between Netflix and this podcast, is grateful F1 becoming more and more popular amongst his friends. So, please send your friends our way. And if you want to get shouted out at the top of our show, take five to give us five and give us a five-star review on iTunes, and we'll shout you out at the start of the show. So today we'll be giving our analysis and reaction to qualifying for the finale, the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. We're now streaming the live show, live on YouTube if you're listening after the fact. So be sure to like our Facebook page, follow our Twitter, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Formula One Grid Talk. Then ring the bell icon so you're notified of future shows when we go live. I'll start with you, Tom, because you're a sort of heart on your sleeve Max Verstappen fan. It's a really good lap for Max there. Absolutely brilliant. How can you keep the Mercedes behind going into the last race, and how can he sort of deal with the pressure, I guess, of being, you know, behind in front of a seven-time world champion going into your final race?
You say I wear my heart on my sleeve when I'm a Verstappen fan. I don't know what you mean.
Sorry, have I got the wrong person?
No. How's he going to deal with Hamilton behind him? You would tomorrow, right? We're going to expect probably Verstappen to have a better launch because he's on the soft tyre. But he's going to really have to make sure that he can sort of manage that gap between him and Hamilton and not burn through his softs too quickly. Obviously, the track will get cooler again as we go later into the night. But the pit stop strategy, how well Perez can sort of handle Hamilton, how well Max can eke out his tyres, all the rest of it, it's going to be big. And you know that Lewis is going to be closing up, then backing off, recharging his battery, cooling down his tyres for a lap, and then coming back at him. It's the pressure on both of them, but I think especially for Verstappen, now that he starts on pole, because effectively it is his to lose tomorrow, because he, without trying to make a really bad pun, he is in pole position to lead into turn one. And that's not me trying to be funny. I just don't know the best way to phrase it. I promise. But you would expect Max to get the better launch tomorrow. He's on the right side of the grid, arguably. And you know, obviously he is ahead of Hamilton on a softer tyre, like I said. There's going to be so much pressure on him tomorrow. And I just hope that it doesn't boil over like we saw last week.
Yeah, a nice clean fight. We'll go to you, Olivia. Lewis Hamilton, not a great lap, his first lap, and didn't improve on his second by anywhere near enough. What can he do tomorrow to obviously the level on points? What can he do to overcome Max and take the title?
Well, I guess just have a good start and get a good launch off when lights go out, because already he has tyres on his side. He has medium tyres, so he's going to be going longer. We assume he's going to be going longer. So, just to make sure he gets ahead of Max in like the first corner, which apparently he's been having. It's been a tricky one for drivers with, well, we were seeing in the qualifying session, but I don't know. Like, the only thing that he can do right now is just try and get ahead of Max, because he has a leg up on him with tyres. So, and I don't know how it's going to pan out with the two-stop strategy, but either way, it's it seems like it's good for him. He's going to be good to go. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of it's obviously a two stop, but that's what we're looking at. I'm going to kind of stick on the Hamilton Verstappen thing, basically, because it's sort of taking all the gravity. It's a massive sort of gravity shift, and it's what everyone's talking about with you, Aaron. Verstappen now has 10 poles, 10 pole positions to Hamilton's 5, but the race wins us, and obviously, as has been sort of well publicised, bearing in mind the way that the championship could play out, is 9-8. Do you think that will be a help to Hamilton, particularly again with the tyres and the better launches that Mercedes seem to get going into this first corner and the first phase of the race?
Yeah, I think Lewis is probably not where he expected to be, but he's going to relish being the hunter tomorrow. He has got nothing to lose and everything to gain. So considering his strategy and the fact that he has come through in recent races to defeat Verstappen in Brazil, where he came past everybody, and in Jeddah as well, after all the shenanigans that were going on there, he will feel maybe not like he has a massive edge on Verstappen mentally, but he knows that he can get the job done. He's got the car to do it, and he is the driver to do it. But it's going to be tough because Max is going to defend his position as ferociously as he possibly can. And we know exactly how far he will go. I don't think he'll cause a collision because they both know that the FIA are looking at it really closely, and any collision is going to be probably dealt with a more severe penalty than normal, because it would be perhaps a deterrent for anyone else thinking about it in the future if you want to drive this way. And then, leave it open to interpretation about a collision and who's at fault in the final race. But it's going to be so exciting. There's going to be so much hinging on the start, and then once that settles down, there's so much strategy involved. It could be a two-stop. It could also be a one-stop. Lewis could one-stop this race and go through to the end. We don't know how well they're going to be able to overtake, if they're going to be able to follow. Are the tyres going to overheat? Who knows? There's just so many questions that need answering tomorrow. And obviously the big one is who's going to be world champion.
Yeah, 100%. It's kind of, that's it. That's the we're only going to find that the proof is in the pudding here when it comes to it. Behind, it's not ideal actually for either team, Tom. When you've got Lando Norris, who put in, let's not take anything away from him here, an absolutely brilliant lap to take third, and you've got the other the teammates of the two title rivals really quite far behind.
Yeah, it was a stormy lap by Lando to take P3, and somewhat unexpected given he only just made it into Q3 itself. And in Lando's post-quali interview, he said he's just going to sit back and let the action unfold in front of him. I think that's quite sensible, because it's not worth potentially ruining his race for him to get tangled up in something to do with them, and then they're potentially be an incident that he gets caught up in, or potentially causes, or what have you. So it's Lando's just gonna run his own race. I suspect he may end up having a bit of a quiet race, but then he could have Perez coming past him at the start. Perez gets a good launch, because Perez is only P4, whereas Bottas is all the way back in P6. So in terms of the sort of wider strategy game there, having Perez P4, if Red Bull can get in P3 straight away at the start, just have him sort of keeping tabs on Hamilton, if you'd like, Red Bull are going to sacrifice Perez. They did it in qualifying, but Perez has openly said that's what he's there to do, and he doesn't mind doing it, because Verstappen is another league. Verstappen and Hamilton are another league from the other drivers on the field at the moment. And then Bottas, he's either going to get a decent start and all the rest of it, or he's just going to get caught in about P6, P7. And he's just going to poodle around in his final race for Mercedes. and then come home. Although I've just thought it could be big for the constructors if Bottas gets caught in a melee and if Max wins and Perez then say comes third and Mercedes gets second and sixth, you know, it could swing the constructors either way. Let's not forget about that this weekend. You're muted.
I'm an idiot, is what I am. yeah, it's a big possibility you mentioned. As Thomas said, Sergio Perez in fourth. Lando Norris obviously has his own race to run, particularly with the battle for Ferrari in his McLaren. Do you think he's going to fight Perez too much, or do you reckon he'll sort of side with his compatriot with the team that is providing the McLaren's engines and put up a bit more of a fight against Perez in the start, Olivia?
No, I don't think he's going to put up a fight. But just like he said, if there's an opportunity, he's going to take it, but only if he knows that he won't compromise himself or the title championship in any way. Just like he said again, he is in a race for fifth in the Drivers' Championship, so I don't think he has much business putting himself there, or I don't think his car will have the pace long term to get himself in the running for in between Hamilton and Verstappen, or even just in between Red Bull and Mercedes. So I think he's going to run a clean race. Hopefully he will, but I don't think he has any business compromising himself in any way with Mercedes, if that answers the question.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's a decent number of positions against the, you know, he's still first, but you know, he's starting in seventh place as Charles Leclerc is his championship rival, and he's only 4 points away. We've got Sergio Perez. Bearing in mind, it didn't work out so well, I believe, on getting the tires. I've completely blanked what he qualified on in Q2, but bearing in mind the amount of running that Red Bull were doing on the medium in practice three, Aaron, do you think that's maybe sort of it's a bad question, but do you think that's throwing a spanner in the works almost?
Well, Perez will start on the softs, and I think Red Bull will want him to be really aggressive and really attacking. And if you're going to sort of give anyone a raw deal on tyres, you want to give it to Sergio Perez, because he can make lemonade out of lemons with them. So it'll be interesting to see. He's got to dispose of Norris pretty quickly. Otherwise, there's going to be a gap and he's not going to be able to fill it. And that's going to open the door for Hamilton to strategize his way past Verstappen and snatch the title. So it does help the fact that Sergio is good on the tyres and he's on the soft tyres. So he could get a good launch. If he can get into third place, then Red Bull have a really good opportunity to corner Hamilton and secure the title for Verstappen. But it does hinge on how well Checo can get past Norris in third. And perhaps, given that it's Sergio, they might be able to one stop and go soft medium. That might be a tough ask even for Sergio, but it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, this track is a little bit faster than it is, faster than it used to be, but there's still the opportunity. You know, the bulk of the track is still the same. They're still about to cool your tyres and look after them and just maybe take a slightly slower route, but one that's going to do you better in the long run. Now, we talked about the Ferraris. Ferraris have seemed fairly quick, and obviously they're putting in fast lap times, given sort of Q1 and Q2. It's the fifth place for Carlos Sainz. Is that a little disappointing, particularly when Lando is in third, Tom?
I'm also muted. Sorry, who did you say? Carlos Sainz, yeah?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Just saw a video of Lando hugging his moment. It's really wholesome. Ferrari had a really interesting qualifying. Did anybody else notice they went out in Q1 on the mediums to begin with?
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah. I was sitting there in the kitchen and I was thinking, what's earth are they doing? You know, it's just like, you know, it's just a bizarre option, because for most teams, unless you're Haas Williams, Alfa Romeo or Aston Martin, Q1 is the throwaway session where you just go through the motions to get through to Q2. So I don't really get why they burnt up a set of tyres unless they were saving a set for the race. But they then had to use a set of softs anyway to make sure they got through. So it was just very pointless. But Ferrari, I mean, you know, Sainz in general, he's been neck and neck with Leclerc all year. And I think Sainz has arguably been the more consistent driver. And I can feel the pitch hawks coming out again. But yeah, you know, P5 in that Ferrari. He was the last driver into the 122s, because I think Bottas did a 123.1 or a 123.0. So decent lap from Sainz, obviously 8 tenths back from the field, but that Ferrari is not a Red Bull. But it was a good lap from Sainz. If Lando gets overtaken by Perez, which I do probably see happening, I reckon Sainz and Lando could be in for a fairly decent scrap for the race. And then, you know, if something happens in front of them, they could potentially take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's a shame we probably won't see it. We'll probably be treated to the TV director's view of things, which is, won't be that. It'll be the title fight, no matter how boring that ends up being. After that, right, you said that the Ferrari is not a Red Bull. The thing about the starts is that the Red Bull is not a Mercedes. Bearing in mind, Valtteri Bottas is starting in sixth place, obviously not ideal, but he's starting directly behind. He's starting directly behind Sergio Perez, Olivia. Could he maybe get a really good run and maybe fight it up with Sergio Perez, maybe prevent him interfering in the title fighters ahead?
Bottas, you mean?
Yes, yeah. He's starting directly behind. He's at 16 metres, and that's a fairly good run if you hook it up.
Yeah, I think he could, but then you also have... From what I think, Perez will probably get in front of Norris quite fast, and then Norris is now in the back with Sainz, so they're scrapping for to get ahead, so Bottas needs to clear them really fast, which is not ideal for him, so I think it's going to be hard for him to do. So I really don't know what's going to happen with Bottas. Obviously, yes, the Ferrari is not a Mercedes, but it's not ideal having a McLaren, a Ferrari, and then Bottas behind both of them. So I think he did it in for himself being in P6. So I don't know. It's a hard one. It's a toughie. It sucks for him though. But yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough race. It's not great for Bottas. And if we look at the form book, him being down in sixth doesn't necessarily let him go that much further forward. After that, we've got Charles Leclerc. Not a great qualifying session, but sort of where you think you feel like that was where the pace with the car was, Aaron. Do you think he can? Is there scope for him to go forwards, or is it going to be a long afternoon? Oh, I'm not sure if Aaron is there. Can I throw that to you, Tom?
Yeah. What was the question? Sorry.
Bearing in mind, just Leclerc is, he's a little bit further back than maybe you'd expect him to be. Probably owing to Valtteri Bottas being, you know, again further back than you expect him to be. Do you think he can sort of mix it up and get back on terms and up into the up into better points paying positions?
Leclerc, possibly. He is a very, very good driver. So I would say that. There is a good chance that Leclerc will be able to have a good battle with those around him. I just hope that the likes of himself, the Red Bull cynic in me wants Bottas get caught up in this, the sort of like midfield bunching that's no doubt going to happen. Whether he can sort of get up into sort of like P5, P4, I'm not sure. If he starts scrapping with Sainz, and then if Sainz is already in a battle with Norris, if Ferrari perhaps see that Leclerc's got better pace, they might say to Sainz, move over and let Charlie boy through. Well, I wouldn't be surprised to see that, because although there is no defined number one at Ferrari, Leclerc is the... It seems like there's an unspoken rule that Leclerc is number one, which he's come through the academy. He's been there longer. You can kind of understand. So I think if he is going to do it, he will need a bit of Ferrari support. But I hope that Ferrari don't sacrifice Carlos Sainz for Charles Leclerc tomorrow, because it's probably not going to make an awful lot of difference to anything in the long run.
Yeah, that's a good point you make. It's kind of all sort of locked up at the front. Certain positions in the constructors, and that's unfortunately one of them. Aaron, we had to skip you there. Obviously, you had connection issues, but that's fine. Don't worry about it. But we've got Yuki Tsunoda next. It's a bit of a topsy-turvy session with a couple of lap time deletions, I seem to remember. Do you think Yuki's kind of getting comfortable and a bit sort of... a bit racier?
Yeah, he's getting there. It wouldn't be a Yuki Tsunoda qualifying session without some track limit infringements. So obviously taking heed from his mentor at AlphaTauri and Alex Albon, who also loved a track limits excursion. But yeah, that was actually a really good qualifying session for Tsunoda, because Gasly's been a bit of a supremo in quali this year, regularly in the top six. So for Yuki, who's had wildly varied qualifying sessions where he's sometimes thrown it in the hedge and brought out red flags or just simply not had the pace, it demonstrates that he's learning, the improvement is there, the curve is good and he's following it. He's gone from being the guy who gets knocked out along with the two Haas boys and Alpha, or both of them, and a Williams, to solidly being in coming through into Q2 and now regularly securing a place in Q3. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he's made Q3 at pretty much every race since Austin, bar maybe one or two.
Yeah, he's been really consistent in sort of in the flyaway races.
Yeah, he started really, really banging in those qualifying laps. And I think, I can't remember if it was Brundle who said it on the Sky, I think he was talking about Tsunoda as well, that you know you can bring that racecraft into your weaponry, but if you don't have the sheer speed, then you're just never going to get it. So the signs are good for Yuki, actually, the fact that he's got the raw speed and he just needs to hone his skills a little bit more, which may be part and parcel of the fact that he was arguably promoted a year too soon into the AlphaTauri, but the fact that he's now developing into this very solid driver is proof that he's learning and gaining that experience, which is going to take him forward.
Yeah, it's almost I don't want to besmirch the Red Bull driver program, but it seems that they do that quite a lot, is promote people a year too early and then hone the racecraft later. I think that's been seen numerous times throughout the years. Someone who didn't have that luxury really was Esteban Ocon. It's not been, you know, it's kind of not been the best season sort of for Alpine. A bit up and down. No one's really got an idea of the form book for them. But bearing in mind, he's taken ninth place after last week. You'd expect him to be sort of thinking he could get forward, Olivia, and maybe take just prey on some of the less experienced drivers up front.
It's really hard to know where Alpine will land. It could be at the top, could be at the bottom. But with Ocon this season, you kind of feel that he's the guy who will be there at the right place at the right time. So maybe that will carry on into this race as well, like last time when he almost had a P3. But yeah, he has been lucky, especially given that it's so hard to tell where Alpine is going to end up. And he's had quite good pace this weekend, especially in yesterday, splitting the Mercedes 1-2 in practice. So he definitely could have a good race tomorrow, but it is quite hard to see where he could land, especially because I expected him to be a bit up there in qualifying. So P9 is kind of disappointing. Expected kind of like a P6 or something. But yeah, I don't know. He definitely could be up there. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, definitely. Someone who should be up there but isn't is Daniel Ricciardo, Tom. He's down in 10th place, and bearing in mind that his teammate is on the front, is on the second row, sorry. That's, you know, how can he get himself out of this pretty dire situation at this point?
I don't really know. We thought we had a bit of a resurgence of Danny Rick earlier this year, and he did have a good win in Monza. And there was that sort of period around, it was around what I'd say Spa up until Mexico, maybe, where he sort of seemed to be doing all right, and he was getting good results. He had a good result in Austin, but since then, or since around about then, he has he's just sort of like fallen back down. He's at least made it into Q3, which he has failed to do on more occasions than he should have done this year, especially when his teammate has quite often been P5, P6, you know, P4. He put it on pole in Russia, for example. And, you know, he's P3 today. Lando was P2 in, was it Imola? I think he was P2 in qualifying, or maybe P3, or was on course and their lap time deleted or something. Point is, I'm not really sure what else what McLaren can do for Danny Rick. You know, they've supported him and tried to help him. We know that he takes time to adjust to a car. It took him over a year to adjust to that Renault. It's something to do with the way he brakes and his braking style and the way he drives the car through the corner. It seems to take him a long time to bed into an actual car. So hopefully next year, obviously we've got new regulations as well, you know, massive technical regulation change. Hopefully he can sort of get settled more into that car and support his teammate. Because I said it, I think, last week or the week before. If he would have been in Q3 more often and been in better point scoring options more often this year, McLaren would still be P3 in the constructors. But because he's been so inconsistent, even with a race win, because he's been so inconsistent, that's why McLaren are effectively losing P3 in the constructors to Ferrari.
Yeah, it's a pretty damning assessment, but I don't think you're wrong. You know, it's unfortunately...
I'm never wrong.
Unfortunately, his qualifying pace in McLaren this year has been a bit of a thorn in their side. And hopefully next year, obviously, with the big regulation change, you hope that it maybe suits him more and he doesn't have to do so much work to get on terms with it and maybe can bring them back up and be a proper partner to Lando up there. We then got Fernando Alonso, who was the first out in, obviously first out of the runners who went out in Q2, and you kind of feel like maybe he should have sort of been in the mid pack and maybe stole a slipstream or something like that. Because bearing in mind, it's not too far from his teammate, but we expect better from Lando. We expect better from Fernando, don't we, Aaron?
Well, I think this is all part of his Abu Dhabi L plan. So qualify 11th, pick your tyres, and swamp through the field from there. It really frustrates me with Alpine. Like, on a Friday, they can show some really good pace. Ocon was up in P2. I think Alonso was in the top five yesterday in P2. So for them to only end up 9th and 11th is really frustrating. Now, I don't know whether it's they just go backwards a bit or the others come forward or a little bit of both. But it is annoying because you've got two drivers there who could do so well, but they end up kind of nowhere in the end. But as I said at the start, Alonso has the option of tyre choice. So he'll probably start on the mediums, or expect him to start on the softs as well, because we know what he's like on the opening lap. If there's anyone going to pull a move, it'll be Fernando. So his strategy will be quite interesting to see how he comes through the field from there. He should be expecting some points tomorrow.
Yeah, to steal some words from Mr. Spice a whole bunch of years ago now, Fernando, because he's so consistent, will probably end up on the podium. Right, after that, we've got someone who's been on the podium fairly recently, is Pierre Gasly. It's an uncharacteristically poor performance, isn't it, Olivia, from Gasly there?
Yeah, it really is. P12, that's a whole six down from where he usually is. He's usually top six in qualifying. So it was quite shocking, especially to see Tsunoda, his teammate, far up there and him out at Q2. It didn't make sense. but I don't know. It's quite an underwhelming performance from him. So I really don't know what to expect from him. I think he will shoot up in the grid as the race goes along, but he has seemed to have an off weekend. Yesterday he was good, but you still have doubts with how this weekend could go for him, especially with the P12. That's very odd. So I don't know how it could go. But yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it's kind of up in the air. Luckily, the thing for Pierre Gasly is that he can usually make it go forward rather than backwards. Tom, we've got Lance Stroll next. It's where the Aston Martin has unfortunately ended up. Is there anything left? You know, is this just like a the next couple of hours that they have of running a test session for Aston Martin? Or is there anything that they can maybe do? Is it glory run time?
Is it even a glory run? Or is it just they drive around because they're contractually obliged to and daddy will not give him any pocket money if he doesn't? I went there. Stroll, I forgot about him. Last week I think I described him as a tree, sort of just exists. He's really nondescript. He did actually have a good race last week or the week before in Qatar. One of them he did all right. But, yeah, it's just Aston, just in general, just promised so much after the results of last year and then delivered so little. Stroll, I doubt we'll get in the points. I'm not expecting much from him. He's just going to drive round. If I realised that they weren't going to get any points or anything, I'd probably even just say just retire the car. Just call it quits from here. What's the point in carrying on? I don't have an awful lot to add about Stroll. He's sort of just there. He's just going to be there. He's going to drive around in a green car. Maybe finish the race, probably get laps. At least he doesn't bicker with Brad anymore on the team radio, if that's one thing I will say.
Yeah, they've been kind of anonymous, apart from that time in Monaco, where they were less than anonymous, and we're all still reeling from it. Aaron, we've got Italian Jesus next. 14th place, that's actually not bad, but it's kind of where they've settled into, isn't it, as a team?
Yeah, he's beaten both the Williams and the Aston Martin of Sebastian Vettel, and he's outperformed Kimi Raikkonen. But unfortunately for him, the replacement for him in that seat next season has just won the F2 race. So it doesn't look so good for Gio now, does it? Because he's done pretty much what that car should be doing. It's not a great car, but I had a thought earlier. And I'd like to get some other opinions on this. If Giovinazzi had consistently been qualifying around here, sort of 14th, 13th, 15th, for the majority of the season, as well as having those more sparkly performances like he had in Monza and a couple of other places where he popped it into Q3, would he have held on to his seat or would he still be out the door? Because this is the sort of performance that you go, well, he could definitely still do a job, but obviously he's not doing that job regularly enough to warrant being kept on. And Alpha have decided to take the Chinese money in Guan Yu Zhou. What does everyone else think on that?
If if Gio had had 2 years of qualifying, sort of, like you said, P14, regularly getting out of Q and getting into Q2 with the odd Q3 appearance, and then if he had a race day like he did in Monaco, for example, where he put that car P10, he had a decent race day in Zandvoort, got unlucky with getting punted off. And then also, like you mentioned, in Monza, he had a really, really good race day that day. If he could have had 2 years or at least a year and a half of consistent results like that, because the Sauber in last year and this year has not been great, like you said, I think possibly, yeah. But I think even if he would have had like a year of mainly good results this year, I don't think it would have been enough. And I think Alfa Romeo would have still taken Bottas to replace Kimi, because we know in F1 they'd have to replace a Finn with a Finn. And also, Bottas brings that experience, and Alfa Romeo only have to look at Haas and say, well, if we have two relatively inexperienced drivers, albeit not full rookies, because Gio is in his third season of F1, but someone like Bottas, who has been in the sport for the best part of a decade, has spent going to be 100 races tomorrow alongside the 7-time world champion and one of the greatest drivers the sport has ever seen. You're going to take that experience over Gio, who has done an all right job. And then a team like Sauber or Alfa Romeo or whatever they're going to be called, they're going to take the money. We joked about it in the pre-show, but F1 does need some form of pay driver to survive. And unfortunately, we do see it up the grid. I'm not saying that pay drivers are a bad thing, and that's a whole separate conversation. But I think Alpha would have taken the money regardless, and Gio would have still been out the door.
Libby, do you have anything to add?
No, not really. I'm in agreement with both Tom and Aaron, but I think he may do an Albon, because the situation kind of seems kind of similar between the two of them. So he, after Formula E, I feel like he could come back. I don't know where he would be coming back, but he could, it's the same as Ocon. Maybe he'll come back and do better. We don't know. But yeah, I don't think there was any chance of him staying within Alfa Romeo if Bottas was seatless and they needed someone to take over. So no.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the thing for, like, the other thing I'll add is that, Charles Leclerc sparkled in that seat and got himself to a Ferrari drive. Gio hasn't. He seems to me in a similar driver to sort of Kazuki Nakajima or Kobayashi, where sometimes they can pull out some really amazing performances, but it might be better that he's better suited out of Formula One to the top tier of another area of motorsport. Where he can really shine. Those two drivers went on to do incredible things with Toyota. Maybe he can do incredible things in Formula E or in other areas of motorsport, because I'm sure there are loads of places that would love to have a fairly decent, consistent enough F1 driver on their payroll. Speaking of decent enough, fairly consistent F1 drivers, we've got Sebastian Vettel. Obviously, he's a 4-time world champion, but that, unfortunately, those days are long gone. Tom, it's kind of, obviously he's done decently enough, but again, it's similar to Stroll in that it's a transition year here, isn't it?
Yeah, and we know that Aston Martin are building for the future. They've got this massive factory which is up and coming, it's just Vettel is, ever since he left Red Bull, he has just not been the same. And it was ever since, it's ever since the turbo hybrid era, because in 2014, when Danny Ric came alongside him in Red Bull and started to sort of almost show him up a bit, he's just not quite been the same. He had some good results at Ferrari. 2018, he was in the fight for the title. He probably should have won it that year. But it was all sort of masking what has been a sort of steady decline for him almost. And now that he's at Aston, he has had one, well, you know, two, but one podiums this year. But I think all that's doing, that's not a true representation of how the season's been. And he's just not, he just doesn't seem to cope as well with these sort of, you know, with these bigger cars and all the rest of it. Like we said, Aston are developing for 2022. They are, you know, and like we said, new regulations, all the rest of it. So maybe next year will be different. But at the minute, Vettel, you have to ask some serious questions, I'd say.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like the car's holding him back, but how much is it holding him back? And unfortunately, you can feel like the idea might be not by much. It sort of doesn't matter, Olivia, in some ways, with how obviously things are going to play out fairly soon for his teammate. But Nicholas Latifi has out-qualified George Russell. That's kind of big, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I didn't even realize it until now. It was such a slip under the rug kind of thing. But again, with Latifi, just like with Lance Stroll, there's not much you can say. Obviously, you do wish that he could have done more with this season, qualifying up in Q2 more often. But this is big for him. This is like the second time, no? But I don't know. In Canadian fashion, it seems kind of both him and Stroll are kind of the very quiet and very, I don't want to say boring because that's not nice. But they do seem to just fizzle out and become afterthoughts. But this is good for him. So hopefully he can stick with the 16 and keep going ahead. But I don't think so, because Raikkonen's behind him and so is Russell. So he could lose it. But there isn't much to say about the TV, really. It's good for him, though.
Yeah, hopefully it helps his confidence going into the next season, and Williams have done a decent job on next year's car. Aaron, we've got George Russell next, and if it doesn't matter for Nicholas Latifi, basically doesn't matter for him either. He's done everything he needs to do for Williams, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's probably jumped out of that Williams and gone, God, so glad I don't have to drive that next year. Can't wait to get in the Merc. So it was one of those days for Williams. They didn't have the pace. They weren't going to get out of Q1. Although George was on a lap, I think, towards the end, wasn't he? He hadn't taken the flag.
I believe he had to bail. I'm not sure why, though.
Yeah, because they said he was on a lap and then he didn't complete it. So he may have made a mistake. Might be worth going back through the footage. So they're not really going to score points unless we have the craziest Abu Dhabi Grand Prix ever. It'll be a little bit of a tour around Abu Dhabi and sightseeing for Nicholas and George, you know, waving to each other for the final time in the same car, you know, and then at the end they'll all just sort of wave George down the pit lane to Mercedes. And George will happily skip down there, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's been like a long time coming for George, but he's sort of done his years, and he's done his years in the bad car, and unfortunately, and he, you know, gets his reward hopefully next year, assuming Mercedes done a good job, which you kind of ominously feel like they probably have. I'd like to say that Kimi sort of would be up there, and he'd be, you know, doing really great in like 12th place or even just taking the car up to maybe like a really surprise sixth. But do you think Kimi's checked out, Tom?
I think Kimi checked out about 6 months ago. I mean, you know, he's qualified P18. He doesn't care. You know, he's just seeing out the season. I mean, I think we'd seen it. I think we saw it at a point last year, and this is why I'm surprised that he sort of lasted as long as he did in F1 before he actually decided to leave. He's been mentally checked out of F1 for
probably 3 years.
I nearly did a Boas then as well when I was thinking. I noticed that. Ever since he left Ferrari, I mean, it's like when he got asked why he was going back to Sauber, and he shrugged, laughed, and said, "Why not?" I think that was it. Then obviously the now famous drive to survive bit, where he said it's more like a hobby to me. Yeah, it's just like, I think we got our answer for how he feels about it. So he's just going to trundle around, much like Stroll, and they're just like they're contractually obliged to try not to wipe anybody out, trying to get wiped out. I wonder if you might do a Jensen, just have a DNF and just get absolutely hammered.
I mean, to be fair, I've seen, I know that Kimi, you know, in 2013, obviously when he wasn't paid, unfortunately, for the when he was at Lotus, went out on the first lap, parked it, went off. You know, he was gone before the race had even hit the first pit stop, I think.
I'd tell you something I thought of earlier as well. Because when I saw that Kimi was knocked down Q1, I thought to myself, if he gets, you know, if he has a DNF or whatever, I thought, is he going to jump out of his car and just go to, I bet he's got a yacht or a boat there somewhere. Do you think he's just going to redo a Monaco, 2004, I think it was, when he just got out and buggered off to a boat? If I was him, I probably would. I'd just be like, cool, what are you going to do? Sack me, I'm off anyway, toodles. And just, you know, just go and crack open the champers and crack on.
He might do. He was sunbathing then, I seem to remember, but I don't think he'll be able to at this time of year for it. But yeah, no. Well, I think it was quite telling when in obviously if you're in the Sky Sports coverage, you might have seen Kimi Räikkönen being interviewed by Martin Brundle, having what looked like a lot more fun in some sand dunes, and he's just like, I like the driving, but I hate everything else, and you get the feeling he's done. He's done now.
He can't wait to get to the Amber Lounge.
Yeah. Do you reckon he'll have the jet going? Like he'll have the private jet like running, but at the start,
drive the car straight onto it, won't he?
Yeah, yeah. It'd be like a really weird version of the Italian job. Right, we've got the Haas. Does anyone want to talk about that? Anyone?
Where's Phil when we need him?
Yeah, where's Phil?
Yeah.
I'll take the Haas because they're that's what else are they supposed to do? Like Tom said about Stroll and Räikkönen, and they're contractually obligated to turn up. And if anyone needs to turn up, it's them because they need the money. I mean, they couldn't even afford to put Gene Haas in the team photo. They had to Photoshop him in on Gunther Steiner's body, which was just
embarrassing.
Just a bit weird in it as well.
It was like, really bizarre.
Bearing in mind, Gene Haas is rumoured to not even want to really be putting any more money in. He's already not... Haas Automation makes CNC machines. They're already not using Haas Automation CNC machines to build the car.
As if it couldn't get any worse for them.
It's like, you don't even get... do they not do mates rates?
apparently not. I mean, love him or loathe him, if Dmitry Mazepin takes over that team, at least he's got some dollars to put behind it. Just really hope he doesn't partner up with that bearded bloke whose name we won't mention.
That bearded bloke might actually get some money at that point.
Don't even tempt fate.
Let's not touch it because Tom might rant again.
Yeah, I've got enough time.
I mean, back to the stuff on track. You can't expect Schumacher and Mazepin to be doing much more than they are. But in fairness, Mick Schumacher was 0.2 seconds, give or take, behind Räikkönen and about 0.5 seconds off of George Russell. So that is actually a really good performance, all things considered.
Yeah, that's a good takeaway. Let's not talk about Mazepin because he is further behind.
Yeah, what else is there to say? You know, he's a piss poor driver in a piss poor car, and that's the crux of it. So he's the only driver this season to not get out of Q1. Even Schumacher got out of Q1, and I know I said a few weeks ago it's time to lay off Mazepin. Yeah, it is. He says he's going in on him, but it's just where do you even start? It's just like, He's had a torrid year, you know. He's not, you know, he's you know, with all the spins and everything. Although he did seem to stop doing that. And I'm not saying Schumacher's been innocent by any stretch, but it's just like, you know, the car's been awful. He's made some more than questionable racing decisions on track, and that's what I still have an issue with. So hopefully he can grow up a bit and realize that he's not untouchable, because he sort of has this air of invincibility about him. I'm not just saying it. I think it is because his father is so wealthy that he thinks he can just do something and get away with it and just pay whoever off. And that's not the kind of driver we need in Formula One, regardless of how much money they bring.
Maybe we should give him the benefit of the doubt for the next season. Hopefully he will put in the work and be smarter about it going into the next season with hopefully a better car. But I still do agree with you. He does have an air of arrogance and invincibility about him that he does need to work on. So
yeah,
I don't know what he can do.
No, I do agree with you, Olivia. I would rather see Mazepin somewhat succeed. I'm not saying he's going to turn into a world champion or anything like that, because he's realistically he's not. But when he comes out with statements like "I'm just waiting for an offer from a bigger team," you know, I'm sitting there going, "Really?" there's that sort of like level of sort of like self-entitled worth about him, and sort of arrogance. And I do want to give him the benefit of the doubt a bit, because the car this year has been absolutely torrid for them. You know, it has just had just an awful, awful season, which he knew they were going to have. But that doesn't excuse you trying to shove your teammate into the pit wall on two specific different occasions, one of which in Baku, that could have been an airplane crash.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they can stamp that kind of thing out.
I don't think anything, the most positive thing you can probably say about Mazepin is that you can learn not to do that. You can't learn speed. And he at least does have some speed to sort of start with. So if he can get rid of some of the more ludicrous stuff, hopefully they can have a better year. Using an actual car that's designed for the year's regulations it's actually using. We now move on to predictions, which Tom and I have been through this. I'd like to talk about anything other than the title championship. But as I've said, the kind of, I'd call it media gravity of the situation is unfortunately going to pull us towards that. So I'll start with you, Aaron. What's your prediction for the championship?
It's just it's so hard. Like, my heart so much wants Hamilton to do it. 8 titles, and then, like, not that I would ever want him to not win. I can then sort of park him and my fandom of Lewis to one side and be like, yay, George Russell, Lando Norris.
Once he's got over that record, then it sort of matters less.
I did not like Schumacher when I was growing up. I was very anti Schumacher, so it would be a bit of a one up for me on that respect. But it's so hard to see which way this is going to go. There are so many ways it could turn out tomorrow. Verstappen could run off into the distance and Hamilton won't have an answer, or Verstappen could try that and run out of tires. They might collide. They might not collide. Norris might jump the pair of them at the start if they're too busy covering each other and then disappear. Literally anything could happen. I'm gonna go with my heart and go with Lewis for the victory and the world championship.
Okay, Olivia. What are you thinking?
I honestly don't know. Going into qualifying, when Verstappen had P1, I didn't know how to feel. So I really don't know how to feel about who could take the championship, because if Verstappen takes it, I'd be happy with it. But if Hamilton did it, I'd also be happy with it. So I don't know how to feel about things. Considering that I've been a Verstappen fan for a while, the way the season's gone has left me very, I don't know how to feel about anything really. So I can't give my opinion now because I don't know. I'll be impartial.
Yeah, I feel like this is the same for everyone. You don't know what it's more hope than predicts.
Yeah.
Tom, has anything you've seen change your opinion on what's going to happen? Or I doubt it will. Don't worry. But
what are you asking? What I think will happen or what I want to happen?
Let's go with both. What we'll think.
What I think will happen. I think Max is going to get the better launch. Lewis is going to go long on the mediums. They're going to try and force strategy. I don't think Bottas is going to be in contention to help. And I think between Max and Perez, they'll do enough for Max to win.
Fair enough.
He says.
Yeah. We don't know. No one knows.
Exactly. You know, we don't know this. Oh, I'm so tense. It's looking at my window behind me. It's going dark. It's just like, the sun is setting on today already, even though it's only 4:05. And it's like, tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow, regardless of who wins, history is going to be made in Formula One. And I cannot wait.
Yeah. I guess the only person it's good for right now is Liberty Media. I hope you're making your megabucks. Because I know a lot of people are tuning in when they wouldn't have already. I'll just round things off. My prediction is I think Lewis will have tyre strategy. I think the Mercedes starts faster at the first phase of the start. I think he can probably throw it up the inside at turn one. I think, bearing in mind the way that everything has been policed thus far, I don't think Verstappen will be able to pull the same kinds of moves. Things are different now. This is the last race of the season. But then again, he might rise to it. Genuinely, you know, Lewis Hamilton has had pressure put on him until the last quarter of the last race in seasons before, and you know, but never like this, never a level on points. But I think that mental fortitude might just have the edge. But I'd be intrigued to be proved wrong. Do we have any bold predictions just for the rest of the grid? I'm going to skip the bottom two steps of the podium because it kind of doesn't matter, does it?
Kimi podium.
I'll take it.
That's bold because we're expecting him to not be at the end of the race and to already be on the plane or in the bar.
Probably in the bar. Bar on the plane.
Yep, plane bar.
Olivia, any bold predictions?
Ocon's going to be up there on Ocon podium as well.
Ooh.
Oh.
Tom, anything?
Red Bull beat Mercedes to the constructors.
Oh, that is quite bold. I don't think it's going to happen, but
yeah. But
that's well within the realms of possibility.
Yeah. Bottas is going to be shit.
Yeah.
I went there.
Oof. Bottas to win. I'm going to go with that.
Bottas, that's bold.
Yeah.
that's not bold. That's just dull. Because if Bottas is even in contention for a win, they'll say, nah, go on. This is for Hamilton.
Yeah, read as much as you want into what would happen to facilitate that, but
a lot would happen. A lot would need to happen.
Bottas would have to overtake someone.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He's practicing for Alfa Romeo for next year.
Hey, there's a pit stop. there's a pit stop going to happen. You'll know if you're watching live, but if you're listening after the fact, we now stream the show live on YouTube. So to be sure to like our Facebook page, follow our Twitter and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Formula One Grid Talk, and make sure you ring the bell icon so you're notified of future shows. It's always a bit weird with the YouTube subscription, so make sure you do that. We are now available on Verbal as well as Amazon Music, YouTube, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Music, Omni Studio, and Pocket Casts. Just search F1 Grid Talk. We have a large back catalogue of shows, over 160 episodes now, including interviews with Mario Isola, that's from Pirelli, he's the head of motorsport from Pirelli, as well as retrospective pieces on Tyregate, Senna, and very recently we did a farewell piece on Raikkonen, so I check that out just before it all kicks off tomorrow, just if you're a bit bored, can't sleep, whack that on, and and just sort of remember the you know, as someone who's still a world, who is a world champion, but maybe has not had the kind of career that you'd expect him to. Bit of a Fernando Alonso in some ways. If you still stuck to do for what to do between shows, I'm going to throw it to our panelists. We'll start with you, Olivia. Where can we find your things?
I'm a writer for f1total.ca, a Canada-based website. So we cover all news, anything really. But yeah, f1total.ca.
You, Aaron?
I host the Five Red Lights podcast, which is found on YouTube and most podcast platforms. So if you're on YouTube, just search the number 5 Red Lights and you can find it there.
And you, Tom?
Yeah, so I'm part of Everything F1. You can find us at everythingf1.com, across all your favorite social media platforms at JoinEF1. Also our Facebook page, our Facebook group even, which is the Everything F1 Paddock. We have a Discord server, which is Everything F1. You get a link to from our websites, our YouTube channel, Everything F1. And finally, the Everything F1 podcast, which is available on, Apple, Spotify, our websites, all of your favorite podcasting locations.
Excellent. And if, I mean, it's probably going to be a bit of a cesspool putting to get together, but oh well. If you'd like a lighter look at this finale, I'll be putting together a meme article as I always do. I've got one for almost everyone, but some of the more westerly flyaway races. You can check that out on sportlightbro.com. That's where I just put the 10 best memes together and hope that they're not too controversial. Lastly, just check out our subreddit for F1 Grid Talk to give us suggestions for what we can do to improve the show, and perhaps subscribe to our Patreon for mics, lights, and better recording equipment for our presenters. Heading into the winter months, that is definitely needed. This is not the best lighting scenario that I've got. Right, we will be back after the race tomorrow at 4 p.m. UK time to give our analysis and reaction to what promises to be an incredible finale. Fingers crossed it will be. From the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Thank you very much for watching, and goodbye.